Well, everyone, welcome back to a very special episode of Box Box. Now, why is it special, you ask? Because I'm here on my own. Matt has run the marathon that he's absolutely not banged on about consistently for the last 10 months, but he got it done, so congratulations to him. If you do want to leave him a nice little comment down below, I'm sure he would appreciate that, because I know that he'll be here watching. But yeah, we're here to talk about Brazil, the Sao Paulo Grand Prix. It was a sprint weekend. It was pretty jam-packed with action, controversy, chaos, and of course another Lewis Hamilton penalty. But don't worry, I'm not going there. I don't believe it was a conspiracy. But we are Box Box Podcast, powered by Box Box Club. So do check them out. There are free F1 widgets app available on the Apple App Store and the Google Play Store, whatever it is for Android. And yeah, you can get an exclusive discount. Just check everything out in our bio. But yeah, let's crack on. Okay, so naturally this is going to be a little bit weirder because this is just a glorified YouTube video, in my opinion, but I'm going to not cut it. So normally I've got Matt to rely on, which is quite good because we can bounce off each other, but I've just got to spitball this on my own. So if you see me looking at my notes on the screen, yeah, I haven't got a mega mind. I can't remember everything like the back of my hand. So I will be referring to notes, but we'll be conducting the show in the same way. As always, we will be going through team by team. But if you're new here, do give us a thumbs up, subscribe, and comment down below for when you inevitably disagree with 90% of everything I say. But look, let's start this weekend with McLaren, because it was looking good through the practice sessions. Pretty good for the pair of them. I mean, Lando Norris, it's about time that Lando Norris is given the credit that he deserves, okay? Because I was definitely on the Lando has bottled it brigade bus when Oscar Piastri was seemingly schooling him this season for what, you know, it had Lando written all over it this season. Coming into the season, especially off the back of last season, and let's not forget, he's been in F1 since 2018. It's finally got a car that is capable of winning a title. Red Bull had dropped the ball, particularly at the early part of the season. This title had Lando Norris written all over it. And, you know, up until, I want to say, Zandvoort, until after Zandvoort, it was not looking good for him. It was looking like Oscar Piastri was going to pip him to the title. And he has completely turned that around. And, yeah, that has not solely come from his good performances, but it has also been a mixture of Lando Norris, Oscar Piastri's poor performances. But that doesn't take anything away from Lando. Ultimately, Oscar Piastri could be finishing P20 every single race, but if Lando Norris isn't turning up, he's not going to be closing that gap in the way that he has done. And it was a dominant weekend for Lando, and I think it is about time that people put a little bit of respect on his name. Matt's not here to defend himself, but I am looking at you, Matt. Yeah, it was just quite an outstanding weekend for Lando, and it's good to see that he's got it in him, genuinely, because there have been many times throughout the season, throughout his career, where I've doubted him. I'm not particularly a Lando fan, but I am at the point where I'm actually really respecting the grind here. He's locked in, and he's got one hand on the championship now. Look, let's look at the championship standings. After this weekend, you know, Oscar Piastri had a disaster in the sprint race, and we will touch on that a little bit when I speak about Oscar. But Lando is now on 390 points. You know, Oscar Piastri is 366 points. That's a 24-point deficit with three races to go. Obviously, we have got the sprint in Qatar, I believe. That's not an easy deficit to overturn with three races to go. I'm sure Oscar Piastri is probably praying that Lando has a terrible race. But ultimately, Oscar Piastri needs to win the next three races to win it, essentially. That is what has to happen. Correct my math here, but there's a 7-point difference between winning and coming second, right? He would then also need to win the sprint race and bank on, let's assume Lando is finishing second in all of these, right? He needs to bank on Lando dropping points somewhere that isn't P2, and Oscar does need to win every single race. That is not an easy ask for a driver that has, since Zandvoort, has really not shown up. Now, obviously, there is talk about, have McLaren done something here? I'm not part of that brigade. I'm not part of the McLaren are sabotaging Oscar Piastri to get Lando Norris the world championship. But I am unable to put two and two together here because I don't understand where the pace has gone. The sprint race, I completely understand. Okay, he hit a wet part of the curb. Two other drivers went off in exactly the same point on the same lap. It was pretty, like, incredible, to be fair. But, yeah, it was... It's been a strange one. Watching Oscar Piastri go from someone so ruthless and cold-blooded for the best part of the season... Someone who seems incapable of putting a lap together when it is needed most. And the race was a strange one because, you know, it wasn't the best qualifying for Oscar Piastri. But you get to the race and he didn't get the best start. But come the safety car restart, he actually gets away very well. You know, Kimi Antonelli gets poor restart. He comes up the inside and, yeah, he gets a 10-second penalty for a collision that I think is harsh, personally. That's my opinion on it. He did lock up into turn one. My opinion is that Kimi Antonelli turned in as if he wasn't there. Now, even if Oscar hadn't have locked up, he still would have been there, and Kimi Antonelli was just turning in as if he wasn't there. I believe Oscar Piastri was far enough alongside him to deserve the space. And I know Kimi came out and said, well, you know, I was in a bit of an awkward situation because I had Charles on the outside, I had Oscar on the inside. He wasn't that far alongside me. I disagree. And I was trying to leave enough space. Well, there was enough space for Charles Leclerc, because you could have parked a bus in between the two of you, but it was my opinion that he turned in on Oscar Piastri and that a 10-second penalty was incredibly harsh. I'm pretty sure that he was given the penalty because he had lost control of his car, but yeah, I don't know. I think if Kimi Antonelli was a bit more of an experienced driver, that incident wouldn't have happened. Obviously, it went on to ruin Oscar's race, essentially, with him finishing P5, which he would have finished P2. Still not ideal for his championship either way, finishing P2, but it's a lot more ideal than finishing P5. So yeah, I'd be keen to know what you think about that incident, because I've seen a lot of people sort of not agreeing on this topic. And I think this is why it's great. Like, it's open to interpretation. But I know Charles Leclerc came out afterwards and said, you know, Antonelli was as much to blame as Oscar was, for the same reason. He took the corner like Oscar wasn't there. And I do think that's exactly what I saw. Watching it in real time, I just thought, where's Oscar meant to go? That opportunity was there. He had to take it. If Oscar didn't go for that, we'd be cooking him, saying, oh, well, he's not world championship material anyway because he's not going for an open door. But stuff like this happens and now he gets penalised, and I do think it's a little bit unfair. And I know, because I've seen them on Twitter, I know there are people out there that, again, believe it's part of the big conspiracy that McLaren and the FIA are trying to get Lando Norris this world championship. Lando Norris was sensational this weekend. He was almost the most sensational driver on the grid. And obviously, I think you know who I'm referring to. We will get onto that. But, you know, how does this affect Oscar Piastri going into the final three races? Because I'm sure within him, he will be thinking, oh, it's over. I have let this slip away. I am at the point now where I think it would be stupid to put your money on anyone other than Lando Norris, which I think is a real shame. I hope there's something that enables them to pull it back closer. So we go into the last race of the season. I think an episode or two ago, I asked Matt, do you think this championship is going to get as close as it did in 2021? And he said no, he didn't believe it. I think as the dreamer inside of me did, I thought it was going to go down to the wire in Abu Dhabi, but I think I'm starting to lose faith in that. But yeah, I hope something, you know, can come through for Oscar. Purely for a world championship fight in Abu Dhabi. If Lando wins the championship, he absolutely deserves it at this point. I'm not going to say any different. And I think anyone who does say any different is just salty, bitter, and probably has a name that rhymes with Yap Maxon. But anyway, yeah, keen to hear what you think Piastri's mentality is going in to the very, very final stages of this season. But let's talk about Mercedes, okay? Because it was a pretty decent weekend for them. And I mean, Mercedes have typically performed quite well here in this new era of car. You know, George Russell got his first win in Formula One and the first win for Mercedes in this new era back in 2022. But, you know, George uncharacteristically outperformed by his teammate this weekend. There's a funny rumour going around about this Kimi Antonelli thing. Now, forgive me, I'm going to have to withdraw my phone. Normally, I can cut the camera to Matt when I do this, but I'm going to have to openly do it, right? I don't know if you've seen this. If you are deep within the F1 world, then you will have seen this conspiracy. And it's to do with a certain ingredient that countries have banned from foods, right? And basically, I am trying to find this. Okay, it's titanium dioxide, right? There's an Antonelli and titanium dioxide chart. Don't click off here, right? Because this might sound boring, but it's ridiculous. Basically, in every country that in every country that Kimi Antonelli has raced in where the food additive titanium dioxide is permitted, he has performed significantly better than the countries where it is banned, such as Imola, Monaco, Barcelona, Spielberg, Spa, Budapest, Zandvoort, Monza. There was something on his average position where his average finishing position was like 12th in the countries where it is banned, but it's like P4 in the ones where it is unbanned. So I don't know whether there's something to that. There's absolutely not, but I thought it was quite funny. But Kimi Antonelli had a very, very good weekend. You know, it was a career best finish in P2, which is pretty sensational for an 18-year-old. You know, he's had quite a lot of opportunities this season to have his confidence knocked. He's come up against a very, very, very good teammate in George Russell, who has had I would argue, his best season in Formula One. I think George has really shown people this season that he is world champion material, and I would love to see him in a title fight at some point in his career because he absolutely deserves it. For me, this might be a controversial take. George Russell is capable of winning multiple world championships if you give him the car. So to come in as a rookie, 18-year-old, you know, have the setbacks that he's had, particularly like at Imola, his home race and everything, Kimi Antonelli has done really well this season. But there is a statistic that I want to talk about that's been floated around, right? And it's about Kimi Antonelli surpassing Lewis Hamilton's 2007 rookie points tally, right? Which is just probably the worst, worst record or statistic break of all time, because the point system was different. Back in 2007, not only did we only race like 14 times a year, by the way, or something ridiculous, you only got 10 points for a win. Now, I'm sure if you adjust that accordingly, Lewis Hamilton is on something like 260 points. Well, Kimi Antonelli is nowhere near that. Now, I don't want to rain on his parade. I'm not taking anything away from him, but this is just such a moot point. Like, it doesn't exist. The record's not broken, okay? That's like saying I don't know, Nicholas Latifi has broken Lewis Hamilton's all-time win record because all of a sudden we're giving wins to finishing P20. It's irrelevant. It's not the same, okay? We're counting them differently. But Kimi Antonelli, what a weekend. Obviously, qualified P2 in the sprint race, finished P2 in the sprint race, qualified P2 in qualifying, and then finished the race in P2. And he did have a very, very racy Max Verstappen breathing down his neck on the final few laps, which I can only imagine is the worst sight any F1 driver can see. Max Verstappen in your rear view mirror. I genuinely cannot think of anything worse, but we'll come on to Max. Do you think Kimi Antonelli has proven he belongs in this Mercedes team? There's been a lot of debate around Kimi Antonelli. You know, he stepped into very big shoes. He had to fill the shoes of Sir Lewis Hamilton, a 7-time world champion, 6 at Mercedes, arguably 7, winning 8 Constructors Championships with them. And, you know, they're enormous shoes for an 18-year-old to fill, who, like I said, has not had the most stunning season. He's had some knockbacks, things that would definitely beat his confidence down. But I think, you know, this is what we need to see more of from Kimi. And I do see Kimi on an upwards trajectory. I do really see him coming out next season and being even stronger. I personally don't think he's going to outshine George Russell, okay? I may be wrong, it's just my opinion. I genuinely do believe George Russell is cut from a different cloth. Now, it's very hard to tell because Kimi Antonelli is young, but you look at Max Verstappen coming into the sport back in 2016, and he really looked like a different beast. Now, it's such an unfair comparison to compare anyone to Max Verstappen, but I kind of feel that's what Kimi was hyped up to be. We were kind of all sold that he's the next Max dream. And I think Kimi Antonelli is going to have an incredibly successful F1 career. But I do believe that George Russell is going to be that number one Mercedes driver all the while he remains there. And yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see how that affects Kimi's career path and his trajectory. But that being said, I think Mercedes have an outstanding drivers lineup. And obviously with the absolute debacle of a weekend that Ferrari had, they are looking quietly confident in securing that P2 spot in the Constructors' Championship. But let's talk about, I think, what we all want to talk about, or who we all want to talk about. Red Bull Racing and Max Verstappen, because Max's weekend was like a yo-yo of emotions, okay? It was looking pretty rough in the practice sessions, and you get to sprint qualifying, and Max looked okay. He looked decent. Nothing spectacular. You didn't think he was, you know, you didn't think he was going to head into the sprint race and win it. Yuki Tsunoda, I'm not sure if I should park this conversation for another time, but there has to be a serious conversation about the disparity between these two drivers. But anyway, obviously Yuki had a horrific sprint quality, horrific sprint race. He crashed in FP1. You get to qualifying for the Grand Prix, and this is where it all gets a little bit weird, right? Because Max Verstappen, and I could not believe my eyes, Max Verstappen had a Q1 exit. I mean, can pigs fly? What on earth went on there, right? The car looked like a real piece of work. But I always imagined Max would be able to drag any car to, you know, give him a fucking pedalo, which is not a car. And I would put money that he would carry that into Q3. But for the first time in his career, he exited in Q1. And yeah, didn't seem best pleased about it, naturally. However, he obviously still managed to out-qualify his teammate, who qualified P19, which, this is where I say we need a serious discussion about Yuki Tsunoda, because he's not going to have a seat in 2026. Let's be honest. Yuki Tsunoda will lose his seat in 2026. And I'm convinced that nobody wanted it to work as much as me for Yuki Tsunoda. But you do have to get to a point where you're realistic. And whether it is, you know, whether it is all because of this common thing that people say, you know, Sergio Perez has come out and said it recently. We've heard it all before. Alex Albon, the car is built around Max Verstappen. You stick Sir Lewis Hamilton, Charles Leclerc, anyone in that car, they will not perform. I'm never too sure how much I believe the extent of the significance of that. I mean, I'm not surprised the car is built around Max Verstappen. The guy's a fucking god. Like, why wouldn't you build it around him? You build a car around him, this is what you get. Four consecutive world championships. Do you know what I mean? But I'm not convinced that no one else in the world can drive that car. I'm sorry, I'm just not. But Yuki Tsunoda can clearly not drive that car, and ultimately it's going to cost him his seat. That I'd be more confused about Yuki Tsunoda getting a drive next season than I was the duration of time that they kept Sergio Perez in a seat. So, yeah, you know, this weekend really sums up the disparity in quality between Yuki and Max, because you get to the Grand Prix and Yuki Tsunoda finishes dead last. Okay, he finished P17. We had three retirements, so that is dead last. Max Verstappen, on the other hand, let's talk about how Max Verstappen is the greatest driver on the grid, and certainly, without a doubt, in the debate for the greatest driver of all time. And I will not hear any different. Watching Max Verstappen is, as much as it pains me to say, is an absolute delight, okay? And I think even though Max Verstappen was starting from the pit lane, Max Verstappen finished P3. He finished on the podium. And, you know, there was discussion around, well, should they have pitted him so late to get those fresh tyres? Could he have gone on to the end and potentially won the race? I don't know. Lando was looking particularly quick towards the end of that race, but it was almost a P2 for Max as well. Kimi Antonelli did very well to hold him off at the end of the race. But this Max Verstappen and his recovery drives, you know, it's not often Max Verstappen has to do a recovery drive, okay? Because he's so unbelievably flawless in qualifying that he rarely finds himself in these situations. But this is definitive of a great driver, right? The last driver to finish on a podium from the pit lane was Lewis Hamilton. Now, Lewis Hamilton is statistically the greatest driver of all time, and in my opinion, the greatest driver of all time. But that's fine if you don't agree. Max Verstappen is firmly in that category, and he did the same thing. But I think what makes this so impressive is, are we all forgetting that Max had a puncture? Max had a puncture on whatever it was, like, you know, very early on, and still managed to finish on that podium. I mean, God knows what would have happened if he started, I don't know, let's say not from the pit lane, maybe if he started like P15, or what if he didn't have the puncture? Could Max Verstappen have gone on and won that race? Do you believe that? Because I believe that had Max have not got that puncture, he could have gone on to win that race, which would have been absolutely mind-blowing. Because let's not forget, Max did this last season. He started P17 in Brazil last season in a chaotic wet race, and he came all the way from there to not just finish on the podium, but to win the race, dismantling any hopes of Lando Norris's world championship. So, very impressive. And, you know, Max Verstappen has dragged this team to some very impressive results when things have not been looking good for them. I mean, whatever they did to the car overnight obviously completely transformed it, and it did look like a different race car. But perhaps they should have considered doing the same thing to Yuki Tsunoda's car, and perhaps we wouldn't have seen such a disparity. But anyway, on to Ferrari. I was going to say my beloved Ferrari, but that is just not the case. But they are currently ruining my life. And I'm sure all Ferrari fans out there, all Charles Leclerc fans, all Lewis Hamilton fans, all of us are watching F1 at this point in time and thinking, why do we bother? Why do we bother? That team is cursed in a number of ways. Also, by the way, I'm really sorry if you can hear rain. It is extremely wet outside and it is just coming in sideways at my window, which is right there. But hopefully it's not too distracting. Maybe it's even relaxing. I don't know. But yeah, let's talk about Ferrari, because I know what's going to happen. You all want me to talk about how Lewis was completely off the pace and, you know, give praise to Charles, because we are Lewis fanboys and we're always biased and we only ever talk great about Lewis. Not true at all. We always call Lewis out for, well, not call him out, but we always call his performances for what they are. And this weekend was simply not good enough. Now, it's undeniable that the Ferrari does look rubbish, okay? Charles encountered issues, but, you know, come qualifying, it's unbelievable, you know? And this is what we see from Charles Leclerc frequently, you know, throughout his career, where he puts in these unbelievable laps and he shows that he has such raw pace inside of him. And if you do give him a car, he absolutely will perform for you. Because if he's doing this in a car that is a piece of work, and I don't care what anyone says, right? You know, Fred Vasseur came out afterwards and said, oh, well, like, the pace was there, at least for one of the drivers. There's no way Charles is coming out off this weekend being like, yeah, well, the car was pretty good this weekend. Like, I'm sorry, it's not. Charles has done an unbelievable job to drag that car into P3 for quali, okay? It didn't look particularly good through the sprint. You know, obviously, Lewis managed to claw it back to P7, and Charles finished P5. But you get into the race, and extreme bad luck for the pair of them. Now, this is where I probably will cause a little bit of controversy, because I know there's going to be Colapinto fans watching here, and they're going to say, well, Lewis just drove into the back of Franco, but we'll get to that. Lewis got a particularly poor start. It wasn't necessarily a bad start off the line, but he got blocked by one of the Aston Martins. believe it was Fernando Alonso. Completely fine, by the way. Like, this happens off the line. He then had Carlos Sainz go into the side of him. There wasn't really much Sainz could do, in my opinion. It was kind of just one of those turn one incidents. But again, very... it kind of just defines Lewis's season. His luck has just not been great in these scenarios. But we can talk about luck all we like. I think this is the price you pay when you fail to qualify where you should be qualifying. You know, you're a lot less likely to find yourself in these situations when you are qualifying in the midfield and further back, because ultimately these drivers have to take these opportunities at these points. And, you know, you've got cars that perhaps aren't as responsive as the cars up front, okay? But this is where you are going to find yourself in those situations. And had Lewis Hamilton have qualified, you know, anywhere near his teammate up in the P6, P5 sort of realm, then he wouldn't have found himself in this situation. So, like I say, we can talk about luck all we like, but ultimately, Lewis found himself in that situation because he underperformed in quali, and he found himself suffering another Q2 exit, which is just not good enough. And then to make it worse, you know, we get into the race, obviously, yep, he has the collision with Carlos Sainz. I think he picked up a little bit of damage, but it did drop him almost instantly to, like, P17. And then he runs into the back of Colapinto while going for the overtake. Now, this is where I'm going to sound like a fence sitter here, but haven't made up my mind on what my thoughts are on the incident. I personally don't believe it was fair to give either person a penalty. You know, I know the FIA love dishing out a quick penalty to Lewis Hamilton. You know, whether it's for turning up in jewellery or whether it's for breathing the wrong way or maybe because he didn't brush his hair that day, they will find a way to penalise him. And I do feel they did a little bit of the same here. I don't think it deserved a penalty. I do think Colapinto jinked to the left. I think Lewis perhaps also misjudged it a little bit. But ultimately, it probably didn't deserve a penalty. You know, Lewis's race was ruined. And I know what you're going to say. Well, that doesn't matter. Like, the rules need to be applied unilaterally and fairly. But yeah, that's just my opinion. I don't think it deserved a penalty. I don't think Colapinto deserved a penalty. But I do think there was a jink at the wrong time from Colapinto. And I think it was a little bit... It highlighted his kind of inexperience with wheel-to-wheel racing. But that being said, you know, could it have been avoided by Lewis? Perhaps. This is where I say I really sit on the fence on this situation. I'm getting a dead foot, so I'm going to have to readjust myself. But yeah, that's... It kind of is what it is. What I don't understand is why the hell did Ferrari not retire him, like, instantly? I'm not sure if you saw any footage of that car going around the track, particularly Sector 2. But it was like watching Bambi on ice, right? That car could not stick to the ground. It was twitching all over the place. And yeah, you know, Lewis came over the radio and said, "This is dangerous, guys. Like, I'm struggling to keep this out of the wall." And I know a lot of people say, "Oh, Lewis always over-exaggerates over the radio and stuff." But go and watch some of that onboard footage. And that car was a walking disaster after the damage. So yeah, I'm not sure whether, do they have to keep the car out on track for a certain period of time for sponsors? I don't know. That could be the only reason, but it went from bad to worse for Ferrari pretty quick. I spoke about the incident and Oscar Piastri picking up a 10-second penalty, but the real catastrophe from that was for Charles Leclerc. Ultimately, he got cannonballed by Kimi Antonelli as a result of turning in on Oscar Piastri. He then bashed off him, kind of went to enter a spin, luckily bumped into Charles Leclerc, who had his front suspension broken, his front left tire popped and you know, kind of dismembered from his car. And that ruined Charles's race, which was a shame because, you know, Charles was on for a good result here. You know, a podium would have definitely been on the cards for Charles this weekend. And he had his race ruined for something that just wasn't his, you know, wasn't his doing though. He was just an innocent bystander. He gave Kimi Antonelli loads of space. And yeah, it was just complete misfortune. So a real disappointing week for Ferrari. And yeah, P2 in the Constructors is almost definitely over now. I'm just going to pull this up quickly. But they've dropped behind Red Bull now. You know, 362 points. They're now 4 points behind Red Bull. And I don't want to do the quick math, but they're about 36 points behind Mercedes. So that P2 is almost dead and buried. But I think, you know, perhaps Ferrari could benefit from the additional wind tunnel time heading into next season. But I don't know, what are your thoughts on this whole Ferrari rebuild? Next season is so pivotal for them. And I don't know how many times we're going to have to say this about Ferrari, you know. Next season is so important for Ferrari. I feel like a broken record. I've been saying this for years about them. You know, you come into 2022, it's new regulations. Wow, they've really, you know, they've hit the ground running. For half the season, they took the title fight to Max Verstappen. Then they drop off. Then it's all about 2023. Well, you know, Ferrari can build on what they started last year. Didn't happen. 2024, they then drop behind, you know, McLaren and 2025, they bring Lewis Hamilton in, a huge cost, astronomical costs in terms of wages. And don't get me wrong, Lewis brings way more to the party than he costs, but just talking about upfront investment and everything. And, you know, that's not working out at this point in time, but Lewis is there for the long run. We have to look at the bigger picture. But again, it's just another season of saying, well, next year's important for Ferrari, isn't it? It's pivotal. Like, how long is this project going to go on? How much longer is Fred Vasseur going to get? What happens if Ferrari come out next season and they're not competing for wins? You know, if they are in the same position, how many years do Ferrari have to keep going around in circles? Because we've not seen Ferrari fighting at the top consistently since Michael Schumacher left. And I know Kimi Raikkonen won a title in 2007. And I know Massa was obviously in the title fight the year after. And then we saw Alonso in the sort of 2012 region. But I'm talking about consistency. And particularly in this turbo hybrid era, they were at some point the team to compete with Mercedes. But we've not seen enough consistency from Ferrari. We've not seen them sit at the top or routinely compete at the top for a long, long time. And next season is going to be important for them. If they don't hit the ground running next season, I really don't know where this leaves Ferrari, because it's been a really disappointing season for them. And I don't know how much longer they're going to be able to keep Charles Leclerc there, because he deserves to be racing for a team that is going to provide him with a car that is going to win a world championship. And I can't imagine he has a bucket load of faith in them at this point in time. And come next year, you know, if they don't provide a car, they're going to lose Lewis. Lewis will retire if Ferrari provide a shitbox next year. And Charles will look for his way out. I'm convinced on that. So, you know, they'll have them for the 2026 season. But how do you recover from losing Lewis Hamilton and Charles Leclerc if you're not in a position where you can guarantee a driver race wins and competing for world championships? You know, it could be dark times for Ferrari if they don't hit the nail on the head next season. But let's look at Haas. Okay, Ollie Bearman, let me put the mic down. What a man. What a boy. I don't know. Is he a man? Is he a boy? He drives like the man. He is quality. Okay, and I've held my hands up already on this podcast, so I don't need to do it again, where I believed Ollie Bearman was overhyped. I'm not afraid to say it. I thought after Saudi last year, yeah, he did all right. It didn't leave me thinking, wow, this kid is the future after Saudi. And then, you know, there was a lot of talk about him coming into the sport, and I thought, yeah, he's probably going to be the most underwhelming rookie. I am delighted to be wrong. I could not be more happy to be wrong, okay? And I could not be more wrong if I tried. He has been really quite sensational, especially the second half of the season. He is, he's really come through, and, you know, Haas will be delighted. Haas will be over the moon, because they didn't look great throughout the weekend. You know, sprint qualifying P15, finished P12 in the sprint race with Ocon finishing P11. You know, Ocon had a particularly poor sprint quali in P19, but Ollie Bearman, P8. In qualifying. But not only that, I know what you're thinking, P8, he must have gone backwards. No, he finished P6. That is a sensational drive from Ollie Bearman, and he's looking hot, I'm not gonna lie. You know, Ollie Bearman will be hot property, and that's probably, Ferrari are gonna be keeping very close tabs on him. You know, we spoke about this last week where, oh, you know, after 2026, Ferrari should replace Lewis Hamilton with, well, it might even be for 2026. That's what the rumours were suggesting. And I pretty strongly came out and said, that is ridiculous. And I did liken Ollie Bearman to a rustlers, which was unfair. Ollie Bearman is a very good driver, but let's not rush anything, okay? Give Ollie Bearman a couple of more seasons racing at Haas. Really get his wheel-to-wheel racing competitive and clean. And let's see him in these positions more frequently than not. Because if Haas provide a good car next season, there's no reason that Ollie Bearman cannot consistently find himself in these positions. Because if he's doing it in a car that is relatively poor, you give him a car that is decent, and Ollie Bearman is going to be a very, very competitive driver. You know, the Ollie Bearman hype train has left the station, and I'm on board, okay? And I wasn't at first. I wasn't for the best part of the season. But, you know, he's jumped Ocon in the driver's standings, and he is, like, pretty significantly clear of him. I know he was already ahead of him before this weekend, but he's now 10 points clear. And when you're racing in a Haas, that's a lot of points. That's not like, you know, if Lando was 10 points ahead of Oscar, that's quite a big points difference. And I think Ocon's had a very solid season. I think Haas will be delighted with their driver lineup, and I think they'll be delighted with how their season has played out. Because, again, just looking here, they are P8 in the Constructors' Championship, but P6 is very much on, okay? It's going to be difficult. There's 12 points to jump the Racing Bulls, and the Racing Bulls are looking pretty solid. But P7 is 100% on. They've got Aston Martin 2 points ahead of them, and I think they will be targeting that going into the final three races of the season. There's no reason they can't do it, okay? Because Esteban Ocon is good at picking up points. Ollie Bearman is hitting form right at the perfect point of the season. You know, we are getting into the squeaky bum time. Is that what they call it? So I think, yeah, it's going to be an exciting end to the season for Haas. And definitely, definitely very impressed with Ollie Bearman. Kick. Gabriel Bortoleto. My God. What is it, right? What is it with drivers when they get to a meaningful race? It's like they have some sort of curse on them. Think of Charles and the Monaco curse. Gabriel Bortoleto gets to Brazil. It's home race. The first Brazilian to race here since Felipe Massa. And it's a nightmare weekend for him, okay? He DNFs in the sprint race. Which, by the way, holy shit. What a massive crash that was. And can I just highlight the fact that he stepped out of that car fine. That was I believe the two impacts, the first one was like 30 something g, the second one was like 54-55 g. The safety of these cars is incredible, so hats off to everyone in the Formula One engineering world that focuses on the safety of these cars, because that was an incredible impact, and the car was absolutely mashed. I'm not surprised he was unable to start qualifying. But let's also just be very grateful that he didn't wipe out the racing ball, the Alpine. I'm sorry, I can't remember exactly what it was. As he flew across turn one. But yeah, you then thought, well, it can only get better from here. Nope. Meet Lance Stroll. He kind of just pushed Bortoleto into a wall on lap one. I mean, last week we came on the podcast and we said, Lance Stroll, we need you to do more. That did not mean ruin Gabriel Bortoleto's home race on lap one, okay? You can't just drive a man into the wall. And if you're going to do it, at least do it to something that's going to make the championship battle interesting. Bortoleto could have just had, you know, even just racing round your home track. He didn't need to get any points or anything. I'm sure he would have just been, sorry, let me just open my water. Great host. I'm sure he would have been happy just finishing the race at this point. But a disaster weekend and one to forget. But, you know, not a bad weekend for Sauber. All in all, Hülkenberg did manage to pick up 2 points, finishing P9. You know, there's absolutely no chance that Kick finished last in this championship. So I think picking up any points will be good for them. They can still absolutely finish higher up as well. You know, we have seen quite a lot of freak results this season. So they are in this battle for, I think, sixth is going to be a massive stretch for them. I don't believe that's going to happen. But they're 10 points behind Aston Martin. So, you know, the race for P7 in the Constructors is well on. And we know the difference that that makes in sponsorship money. And for a team like, you know, Sauber, who are Audi from next year, that's going to be a massive benefit for them to kickstart their F1 journey. So that is really heating up. But yeah, Bortoleto, what a nightmare weekend. And I hope you get to turn up next year and perform in front of your home crowd. The Racing Bulls, good weekend. Very good weekend for them. They'll be absolutely delighted with that. You know, sprint race, not ideal for Lawson. Isaac Hadjar, obviously P10, so he finished outside the points. But qualifying, great for the pair of them. P5 for Isaac and P7 for Liam Lawson. And they were able to convert that in the Grand Prix. Obviously, Isaac Hadjar did fall back a little bit and finished P8. Liam Lawson finished ahead of his teammate in P7. And I don't know if you saw the contact on the final lap. But my God, boys, there's no need for that. Look at the race that you are having, okay? Are we really going to risk that massive points haul for your team, who are in quite an important, you know, constructors battle here? You haven't got Haas that far behind you. You haven't got Aston Martin that far behind you. Do we really need an incident on the final lap for P7? No. And I do think you see this sometimes between the Racing Bulls boys. There's a little bit too much competition for my liking. I know what you're going to say. Oh, it's high-level racing. They should want to beat each other. I completely agree. But also, there is a bigger picture to this. And I didn't think that was necessary. But nonetheless, look, Isaac Hadjar has been rookie of the season. Okay? I don't care what anyone says. Isaac Hadjar is rookie of the season. He's been consistently good the whole season. I think, you know, you can look at Ollie Bearman now in a close second, but I know everyone's going to say, well, Kimi Antonelli's on 122 points and P7 in the championship, but he's in a Mercedes, so what do you expect? So yeah, I think they'll be very happy with the weekend Racing Bulls, and it's just they've looked relatively good all season. I think the big thing is Isaac Hadjar going to get that seat for next season? Is he going to be racing in a Red Bull? There's been so much discussion around Red Bull. It sounds like the rumors are suggesting there's been internal disagreements on recruitment policy and how they recruit. And you know, there's been discussions between Laurent Mekies and Helmut Marko. Where do they look? Are Red Bull in a position where they need to decide whether they stop destroying the careers of the drivers that come through their development programs? And I'm talking about, God, you can go back a long way. And when I say careers, you know, you've still got drivers that have performed very successful F1 careers off the back of racing for Red Bull. But by successful, I don't mean success in the way that we kind of imagine it. A successful F1 career is to maintain being in the sport for years and years. And we've seen that in Alex Albon and Carlos Sainz and Pierre Gasly. But Carlos Sainz is the most successful Red Bull driver to, and I know he never made it to Red Bull, but he obviously left before he got that opportunity at Red Bull. But he is the most successful person to come out of it. And maybe that's because he didn't end up at Red Bull. But you look at, you know, Danny Kvyat, Danny Ricciardo, it went wrong when he left. But Pierre Gasly, Alex Albon, Liam Lawson, now Yuki Tsunoda, is it about time they rethink their recruitment policy? Because the most successful Red Bull second driver has been Sergio Perez, and he was externally recruited. So do they look at Isaac Hadjar, or do they think, actually, you know, maybe we need to look at someone who is not from our development program, and we're not looking to bring a youngster in. Maybe we are looking for, you know, a Perez-like character, and maybe we're even looking to poach Charles Leclerc. Maybe I saw rumours this week, believe it, that Oscar Piastri is in talks about racing for Red Bull next season. Now, that would be mental, would it not? I mean, look, we're going into new regulations. Anything could happen. I firmly believe if you're going to put your money into any team being more successful, it would be Red Bull over McLaren, given that Red Bull have consistently proven it over the last sort of 15 years. But could you see Oscar Piastri leaving McLaren after such successes this season? I don't know. I think if that happened, do you believe there would be something going on? If Oscar Piastri leaves McLaren to go to Red Bull next season, is that a massive indication that he believes something has gone on at that team that has sabotaged his world championship hopes? Because why else would he leave? Why else would you want to go and race Max Verstappen head-to-head every single weekend? Because I don't think there's a driver in the world that beats Max Verstappen consistently in the same machinery. So I don't know why you would want to take that, you know. Max Verstappen is a cut above every single person on that grid. But the rumours are there, and I think it's definitely believable. I can't see why Red Bull wouldn't want to look at an alternative recruitment policy. But if they are looking at Isaac Hadjar, then does bringing someone like Oscar Piastri in stifle his future? Because Max won't be leaving. If Oscar performs like we would expect him to, he won't be leaving. And if Oscar comes in and he doesn't perform, then Red Bull really do have problems, because Oscar Piastri is a fantastic driver. So, yeah, that's a lot to take in. I appreciate it. But let's look at, you know, we'll very quickly touch on Alpine. Pretty good weekend for Pierre Gasly as they go. He picked up points in both the sprint race and the Grand Prix. So that is an impressive weekend for them. You know, Pierre Gasly has picked up 100% of Alpine's points this season. We found out this weekend that Colapinto got, you know, a contract for next season. I don't know if I agree with that. He's not picked up a single point since coming in. They paid good money to get him out of his Williams contract. Yeah. The Colapinto thing hasn't worked out. And I know Colapinto fans are going to be in the comments saying, you're just a Colapinto hater. I'm really just not. Like, I'd love nothing more than Franco Colapinto to succeed. But I just don't see it at this point. I just can't see it happening. And if it happens, man, I've already sat on here and said, I said I didn't believe Oli Bearman was going to succeed. I haven't got a crystal ball. I had to come out and say, yeah, I was wrong. I don't mind admitting that I was wrong. But yeah, the Colapinto thing, I don't see. I mean, money talks. And I'm convinced that's why he's got his seat for next season. But, you know, if they do have a seat, if they do have a car that is capable of, you know, consistently getting points, do you, listening to this right now, watching right now, do you believe that Colapinto is the man that is going to be able to pick up those points week in, week out? Because I don't think he is. I think he's a little bit erratic. I think often enough he's not shown that he's got the pace required. But I really hope he proves me wrong, so don't sit here and get angry just because I have an opinion. Back Colapinto and pray that he makes me come out next season and say, oh my God, I'm so stupid. Because that's what I want. I would rather that. Aston Martin. How many weekends do I have to sit here and say that this team is going to really struggle progressing to where they should be and where they need to be, all the while they have Lance Stroll in that second seat? You know, Aston Martin looked pretty tasty. And by Aston Martin, I mean Fernando Alonso in the Aston Martin. Practice looked good. Sprint quali, P5, finished P6. It did go a little bit wrong for them in the race, for the pair of them, to be fair. But Lance Stroll did also finish P9 in the sprint race, which doesn't get you any points. He did also look pretty decent in sprint qualifying. But yeah, the car did go wrong in the actual race. And obviously, yeah, Lance Stroll ruining Bortoletto's weekend. I don't know, what are your actual thoughts on that? But I just believe Lance Stroll just drove him into the wall. That's my opinion. And I think it is the kind of Lance Stroll fuckery that if we didn't have, I'd be angry that we didn't have anyone doing it. So I'm not going to complain, but I just wish it could have happened to someone else. There wasn't Bortoletto at his home race for the first time since Massa that they had a Brazilian racing around the track. Anyway, let's end on Williams. Interestingly, a fact for you, Williams got the fastest lap here. It was Alex Albon. He got the fastest lap of the race, which is the first time since 2014 Sochi. And it's actually the first time in Alex Albon's career that he got a fastest lap. So, nice one. The disappointing part of this is that they left the weekend with 0 points, which is... I wouldn't say it's uncharacteristic of Williams. I think what we see from Williams is a bit of a seesaw, where some weekends you see them and they look good, you see them other weekends and they look pretty poor. But I think what we are seeing from Williams this season is a more consistent team. We see them more consistently picking up points than not. So Williams, I said it before, they're in an exciting place as a team. I'm looking forward to next season for Williams, and I really hope they come out the blocks all guns blazing, okay, because they deserve it. They just do. They deserve it. Williams are a great team with heritage. They've brought in James Vowles. They've given him the keys to the place and said, look, mate, you do what you need to do here. Transform this whole place. We'll facilitate that, but you do what you need to do. And he's gone in and done an unbelievable job. You know, he's brought together this incredible driver partnership, which is looking very strong. And I really think the future is bright for Williams. I think if you're a Williams fan, you'll be really optimistic going into next season. It doesn't matter. This weekend was, you know, a write-off. It's fine. Williams have those weekends. They've firmly positioned themselves for P5 in the constructors. That's not going anywhere. Unless Racing Bulls, I don't know, randomly become lightning quick and Williams forget how to drive. That's not going to change. But nonetheless, a disappointing weekend for them. But I think they'll get over it. Anyway, that is the end of the weekend. I don't believe the end of the weekend, the end of the podcast. I believe we have a weekend off. Get my trusty calendar out. Before we head to Las Vegas, I don't know if you saw, Lando Norris was saying, oh, I don't think we're going to be quick there. See what you're doing there. Yeah, obviously for us in the UK, it's on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, which is... Is that true? I actually don't know. That's what this says, but it probably is because they are. They're 8 hours behind. Oh, I don't know. But anyway, I'll be back next week alongside my co-host, Matthew. But if you did like this episode, I feel like it was just me talking at you for about an hour. So fair play to anyone that has sat through this. Do like the video. Give us a 5-star rating if you are listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or any audio platform that you consume your podcast on, because it really does help us out. And yeah, we'll see you next week for a brand new episode as we get into the very, very final stages of the season. Peace.